Hello everyone and welcome back to Thickcast. I'm your host Molly Edwards and today it is just me on the podcast, but I wanted to do a little kind of follow on from the podcast I did with Hayley. And if you've not listened to that podcast, like, go back and listen to it. But this podcast is all about kind of coaching someone with some sort of neurodivergence. So whether that's ADHD, autism, or kind of other kind of mental health related things as well. So it might be like bipolar, depression, anxiety. I think that a lot of them kind of intertwine anyway. So I think that, yeah, I'm going to cover quite a lot of bits on here. Obviously, I'm not a psychologist, so just remember that. A lot of this is kind of anecdotal from people that I coach and obviously myself as well, as being someone with ADHD and a bodybuilder, and kind of how I am doing things that I might struggle with, and that I notice also in clients that have ADHD as well. Like I said, it's a really difficult one because with ADHD, I think some people know from a child, and they're brought up and they know, and I think that actually then they kind of learn their coping mechanisms quite well. And that's like ADHD, autism, any of it. If you're my age, which is very much knocking on the door of 30 right now, you probably weren't diagnosed as a child, especially if you're listening to this as a woman, because women back then, we just didn't have ADHD as a kid or autism as a kid because that was a boy thing. And it was, you know, it was very rare that women could have it. I mean, why would we, right? We're only 50% of the population. But a lot of us now are getting into adulthood and wondering why we struggle with lots of different things. And then learning that it is due to ADHD or autism or kind of a mixture of both or other kind of neurodivergence. And actually saying that, it's not just girls, because I've got a friend who's a male who's recently been diagnosed as well. Didn't know. Similar kind of age as me. So I do think it is more prevalent in schools now. And I do think there is a lot of people out there that do struggle. Now, whether they have ADHD or autism or whether they just have some traits of it, and they might struggle with certain things. So this is kind of a podcast to kind of help you and just the things that I found that helped me and the things that I struggle with and considerations when you're coaching someone with neurodivergence. So I'm not even sure if I'm saying this quite right, to be honest. But yeah, because I don't think that I know all the answers. I know I don't know all the answers. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't read books, to be honest. I listen to audiobooks and stuff. I like to say I read books because I think it makes me sound more intelligent. You know, watch YouTubes and bits and pieces on TikTok or whatever and kind of take the advice that sits with me and go with that and, you know, things like that. And I think it is, like I said, I don't have all the answers. I'm still very much going through my own journey. But what I can do is kind of help you a little bit along the way as well. And what I will say is a lot of us were probably diagnosed as well with depression or anxiety from the doctors, and it's kind of then can make you feel very lost. So you might be like very early on in your journey and you've been diagnosed with depression or anxiety, and you know you're not really depressed and you know you've not got anxiety, but that's just what the doctor diagnoses you with, because when you go and see your GP, they can diagnose you with that, they can give you some happy pills and that's it, they've done their bit, right? I mean, they think they have, they really haven't, and they haven't had the situation at all. And probably it doesn't help you at all, and you feel exactly the same, and then they might go, and then you ring them or go in and you say, look, this isn't doing anything, and they go, oh, well, you just need more happy pills. So just take double, triple, quadruple the dose of happy pills, and then you'll be better. And funnily enough, it doesn't work. So then you might be looking at it going, okay, maybe actually there's something else going on here. So yeah, I think I've just kind of whittled away a little bit there of different things that you might be going through. But what I really want to get into is coaching someone with kind of, and this is going to be mainly ADHD and autism, mainly kind of ADHD, because that's where I understand the most. But also some little bits about depression, anxiety, things like that as well. So firstly, communicate with your coach if you do have ADHD, autism, depression, anxiety, bipolar, anything kind of mental health related. Communicate that with your coach, and you should be with a coach that understands, that can empathize, and that is willing to help you with that. And I think that's really, really important, is working with someone that, because I do see people online, and it actually really, really, I can't get my head around it, that are just like, mental health is like made up and you just need to shut the fuck up and work harder and all this like absolute bullshit, because that's not helpful. And if you're working with someone and they're saying like, okay, well, that's not really like my responsibility, you need to sort your shit out, like, that's not helpful behavior. You need to be working with someone that's got that compassion there. And I say that because, especially someone with ADHD, like, the forgetfulness is real. And you can tell me to do something and I will be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I won't do it. And not out of like laziness or anything like that. It's literally because I've just forgotten. And no matter what you do, you just keep forgetting. So then you need to put things in place to remember. And sometimes that can be like, for example, say I'm competing next month. And I will have been prepping. So, I mean, I'm recording this in February. So I'm prepping that I'm going to compete on the 20th of March, right? So it's a month's time. And I will have been prepping for, say, 20 weeks. And I know that I'm doing this show on the 20th of March in Birmingham, we're going to say. And I would have known that I need to book my hotel. And I know I need to book my, my registration, my tan, everything. And I'll know that. But the chances are I've probably forgotten to do that. So it might just be that I need reminding quite regularly. Like, Molly, you need to book this. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'll do that. And then I don't do it because I was halfway through doing something else. So I can't do that at that point. So then it goes out of my brain. So it might be, as a coach, you just need to remind someone a little bit more, like, you need to book this hotel. You need to book somewhere to stay, because otherwise you get like closer down the line and you can't stay in that hotel because it's fully booked. And, you know, it happens all the time. So it might be, as a coach, you just say to them, no, I'm actually doing all my hotel bookings today. And I block out days when I book like hotels and stuff. And say to that person that you're coaching, look, I'm booking hotels. Do you want me to book yours and you can just give me the money? And they'll normally be like, yeah. And that's like way easier for them. So that can be like kind of one thing. But it's that kind of forgetfulness that you might just need reminding a little bit more often, and reminding with compassion, not being like, why the fuck haven't you remembered to do that? Just being like, oh, did you remember to do this? Like, have you done this? Okay, that's cool. Like, you know, just don't forget. So that's one kind of thing there that I just think you need that kind of compassion with, because it's not like you're doing it out of malice or out of laziness. It's just genuinely, if you're in the middle of something, you can't focus on then something else. So it's one of them. I'm a big fan of to-do lists with forgetfulness. I'm a massive fan of to-do lists. I'm going to come onto that in a minute. But it's probably one of my clients actually got me this like little box after she finished her shows, and there was like some really cute stuff in there, like, you know, little body scrub and some socks and all that stuff. And one of the things that was in there, and it's genuinely been like the most helpful thing anyone's ever got me, was a to-do list. And it just saves my life, because I just write everything on my to-do list. I tick it off as I'm going through the day or the weeks. I have like a weekly one, I have a daily one, urgent things go in my diary, and I write it all down. Like, if it's on my phone, it's not going to happen because my phone's on different pages. But if my diary's next to me now, it's open on today's day, I can see my list is like things to do today: podcast, reels, hoover the house, gym, dog walk. And then I've got like any posing sessions I've got in there as well today. So it's all in there, like the things I really need to do. And that's really helpful for me. So for some people, like writing things on their phone, to do this on their phone works amazing. There is apps out there as well. I don't actually use them, so I can't really advise on them. I just like to write down in my diary. And for me, that works great. But yeah, that's kind of that. So I think that the first thing when you're kind of working with someone and they've got any kind of form of neurodivergence and or mental health is actually asking them, like, do you know your coping mechanisms? And that client might say to you, like, yeah, actually, I do. Like, when I'm stressed, I find doing yoga is really helpful for me, or I find gratitude journaling really helpful for me, or journaling really helpful for me, or art therapy, or walking outside, nice bubble baths. I'm just trying to think. Ice baths, complete opposite. You know, and it's asking them, like, do you know what your coping mechanism is? Is that person comes back to you? And I remembered bubble baths because I used to have a client, and she might be listening to this, she might not. But she, if she was stressed, I'd be like, mate, you need to go and have a bubble bath. And like, I knew that was the one thing that however stressed she was, she can go and have a bubble bath. I think probably sit away from the kids for like 20 minutes, half an hour, read her book and chill out. And that would like bring the stress levels down. And I think it's knowing that coping mechanism worked for her. For me, I can't do a bubble bath because I'm just sat there for too long and it's just really boring. For me, yoga works really well. Journaling and gratitude journaling works really well. And walking outside. If I'm really, really stressed, I have to walk up. Like, I just have to go and walk with my headphones in normally with the dog. And like, that will chill me out. So I think it's talking to that client, understanding what, and they might not know what their coping mechanisms are as well, because they might not have explored that. So it's then talking to them and saying, like, have you tried this? Like, maybe we should try this. Like, have you tried yoga? Okay, no, awesome. Right, here are some people that do yoga online. Maybe try that. Maybe if you know people in their area, send them recommendations of people in their area. Things like that. Okay, you tried that. Is it working? We tried it a couple of times. It's not working. That's cool. Let's try journaling. Like, let's try art therapy. And normally pretty quickly you'll work out something and they'll go, oh, this is really helpful. Again, that forgetfulness will come into play. Because I know for me, yoga is fantastic. And I used to do like 5-10 minutes in the morning of yoga. And I used to do gratitude journaling at night. And I was really, really good for a while. And then I just kind of forget because other things happen. And I'm stressed and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do to calm down. And then I have to step back and realise, actually, these are things that really help me. And it's that forgetting. So then sometimes it's just reminding that client and saying, okay, like, you're very stressed at the moment. Are you still doing your yoga? Are you still doing your journaling? Oh, no, I'm not. I've forgotten. Okay, well, maybe let's get back on that again. And then actually, within a couple of days, that kind of stress levels will come back down again. So it's kind of understanding each client's coping mechanisms and sometimes reminding them just to do it. And also what to do if they feel overwhelmed. So with ADHD and autism, that feeling of overwhelm can be like really, really strong. And I think that sometimes that's for me when I just can't do anything and you get like ADHD paralysis because I've got so much to do, I can't do all that. So I just won't do anything. So I think then it's like, if you know you've got a client who will get that overwhelm, it's breaking it down for them and saying how we're going to do all of this and not giving too much information all at once and being like, you know, just throwing everything at them because that's too much. So you can't just start prep day one and be like, hey, these are the shows we're doing. This is the food we're changing. This is the cardio we're changing. This is the steps we're changing. I want to book this, this, and this hotel. Get your bikini, get your heels. That is way too much and they just won't be able to do it. So understanding that overwhelm, talking them through it. So saying, okay, we're going to start prep this week and we're just going to change calories and cardio. Because realistically, that's probably what you're going to change the first week. Okay. They can do that, that's cool. And then maybe the next week you go, okay, like, let's look at, we need to start looking at your bikini, ordering your bikini, things like that. Just doing it bit by bit. What I find really helpful is with my clients, I use Google Sheets and they all have on there a packing list of things that they need for show day. So show day packing list, and that's like bikini, heels, jewelry, might be tan on there. It might be bed sheets if they're staying in an Airbnb. Food, salt, water, pump products for pumping up before stage, pump bands, all of that bits and pieces. We won't go through the whole pack in this now. But that's all on the sheet. So they can see that and they can maybe, if they're having a good day one day, just pack all of it. And also these good and bad days can also go with someone's cycle. So if you know someone gets really overwhelmed when they're due on their cycle, maybe that's not a day to say, give them loads of information. Maybe around that ovulation when they're dealing with life quite well, that's when you give them a bit more information and things to do. That's when you say to them, like, okay, we're having a really good week, so why don't we start packing your show day bag? Obviously, food you can't put in there, but a lot of other things you can put in there and you can kind of get that ready. So that's kind of one thing. And also, I put in there things for their shows. So, you know, I do another list and it's like, okay, so what shows do you do? And you might be doing PCA, Tubros, and UKUP. So we're doing these three shows. Okay, we need to get our membership for the shows. Okay, we can tick that off when we've done that. We need to get our hotel. We need to get our tan booked, our photography. So all those kind of things that you can do like weeks in advance. Also, that helps with budgeting as well. You can do that. You can tick that off your list. And that can feel less, you know, A, you're not going to forget it because it's all written down. B, you've got that dopamine hit from ticking something off your list. And C, it makes it less overwhelming because it's all there in front of you. I find overwhelm is when people are telling me all these things and it's all in my brain. And then I don't know what to do because I'm trying so hard not to forget everything. That's when it can be really, really hard. So sometimes just writing it down so it's clear to do is a lot easier. But I also think with someone that, you know, is autistic, that can be really a lot easier for them as well, or OCD, because they like to plan ahead. They need a plan. They need to be able to see it and know exactly what they're doing. So if you write that down for them, that brings down that kind of anxiety as well, because it's all written down. So the plan is there. They know what's going on. Peak week can be very kind of daunting as well, because peak week things change day to day. Now, if you're saying to someone, look, I can't tell you what your food's going to be day to day a lot of the time, because we don't necessarily know. Especially that first peak week, we're going on what the look is. Now, we're going to have a rough idea, but I'm not a fan of being like, well, we tried this one week 4 weeks ago, so that's exactly what we're doing for peak week. Because, you know, if you've coached a lot of people, things change, and it can be things like the weather. I remember having girls last year, and we did this show, and it was boiling hot day. So what we kind of originally said for like water and sodium had to be pushed up because it was so hot just driving down to the show. So there are going to be things that change like that. And it might just be the body just responds differently. You might get ill. Your period might just decide to come. You know, there's so many different things that play a factor, especially in women. So you can't say this is exactly what we're doing food wise. This is exactly what we're doing water wise. But we can give a really rough idea. We can give a really rough idea with training as well. So maybe writing out that peak week kind of plan. So this is what we're training. This is what we're doing cardio wise. This is what, you know, we're roughly doing food wise. And it might just be training day food, non-training day food, something like that. You know, carb up here, not carb up there, fat load, whatever you might be doing. A diuretic protocol. So all of that's kind of written down. And again, a lot less daunting. It feels a lot more organized. They know what's going on. Obviously explain, this might change. And that again, just it's reducing that stress and that anxiety. And when we're talking about competing as well, we want, especially around a peak week, right? We want that kind of stress and anxiety to be as low as possible. Now, I know a lot of what I've been talking about is prep, and that's fine. We'll come into some kind of off-season stuff as well and some kind of post-show stuff as well. But I do find that obviously those kind of tick boxes for show day packing this, you're not going to need that in off-season, you know? So the next thing we're going to talk about is kind of nutrition. And I think that when we're talking about nutrition, when we're in a prep, with ADHD, you hyper-focus. So you're like, and even like with, you know, a lot of people anyway, they hyper-focus on this prep. Obviously with ADHD, it is intense hyper-focus. And you are not going to miss a beat. You're going to do everything to the letter. That is all you're focused on every single day. When you come out post show, it's so hard because that hyper focus goes. And with ADHD, your brain is basically constantly searching for dopamine. And when we're in a prep, we can get that dopamine because the scales are going down, ting, dopamine hit. We are eating our food all on plan, great, dopamine hit. We're hitting our steps, dopamine hit. Cardio, dopamine hit. Every time you're ticking off a box, it's a dopamine hit, right? When you go into post-show, obviously things are reversed, so the goals aren't quite there as much, if I can kind of put it that way. If you've been there, you kind of know what I'm saying here. The dopamine hits aren't going to be as much. So then when people say, okay, post-show, you know, this is your food, we're going to reverse diet, blah, 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 and then people struggle with binging, there is no wonder. Because you tell me anyone that gets a fucking dopamine hit off chicken breast and rice and broccoli. No one. And with ADHD, what happens as well, and autism I think can be the same, you eat the same food, eat the same food, eat the same food, that food is safe, you like the textures, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden, that food is repulsive. You cannot eat it. And I literally had this in 2021. I could not eat chicken. Like, I'm back on chicken now, me and chicken are friends again. And I haven't had this kind of post-show period. But I did before, and I was like, the thought of eating chicken made me feel physically sick. And I was like, I cannot eat that. Like, the texture, the taste, everything. I was like, it cannot go in my mouth. Like, no. So then it's kind of going, okay, let's communicate that with my coach. Because you can think, like, do I sound a bit of a weirdo here? Being like, I've eaten chicken for, you know, however old, I'm 29 years old, right? 29 years of my life, I've eaten it most days, it's been fine. And then all of a sudden, that makes me feel sick and I'm repulsed by it. And it can make you feel a little bit like, this makes no sense. And we know logically that makes no sense, right? But in your brain, that's not happening. So it's communicating that with your coach and just being like, do you know what? I'm just having a funny moment here. And I can't eat this meal anymore. It literally makes me feel sick. And your coach should be like, okay, cool. Is there anything that you just want? And because what you'll find is your hyper-focus on another meal, another food. A lot of the time, so I know for me, it was like, I just want fruit and yogurt. Just want fruit and yogurt all the time. Okay, cool. So let's change our chicken meal to fruit and yogurt. Cool, we're good again. We can eat that. So that is obviously going to be an issue. Then obviously with the binging and with ADHD, and I listened to this yesterday actually on a podcast, and it really rings true. And it was from this, I can't even remember the book of this guy that wrote it, but they were basically quoting the guy that wrote this book, okay? And they were basically saying, like, ADHD is like high sensitivity. So like you are very, very sensitive to everything around you. And you can get very upset, very overwhelmed, very easily. Like you're just very, very sensitive little soul. So when you then binge with your ADHD, because everything is really, really difficult, you're just searching for dopamine and there's loads of chocolate in the cupboard, so you just eat all of that and you get this great dopamine hit from that. And then it's kind of like this massive low of guilt because you're so, and then you like hate yourself, and it's that kind of massive self-hatred that you get with a lot of people with ADHD as well. And kind of self-sabotage, and why am I not good enough, and all of those feelings are going to come creeping back on you, and it's really, really difficult. And I think that's why some of us struggle so much post-show. So firstly, know that is kind of normal, and that is probably going to happen, and accept that there is a big chance that's going to happen to you. Do I think that you can get better at it? 100%. Because I've said this before, I've had really, really bad post-shows and I've had really good post-shows. And I think a lot of it was my mindset. And a lot of it actually for me was understanding that it's okay and it's not going to be perfect and I'm not going to be perfect and that's okay, and accepting those feelings. Whereas before, I wanted to be perfect, and then when I wasn't perfect, I beat myself up so much about it that then I would go on this massive dopamine like hunt again, find chocolate bars again and binge again, and then have that same kind of vicious cycle. I think that kind of acceptance of myself has made it so much easier for me post-show. And actually then I don't binge, or I don't binge anywhere near as much, because I've kind of accepted that, and I've kind of gone, do you know what, if I want something off plan, like, that is okay. Like, the world's not going to end if I eat a cookie today, you know. Whereas before, one cookie would lead to one bag of cookies, because that guilt and that binge and then that kind of cycle there. So I do think it's really important, kind of, you know, maybe working with someone post-show as well might be really helpful. There's a lady called Clara. She was on my podcast ages ago. I might actually bring her back on. The Clara, she's called the Exercyc on Instagram. And she's actually amazing. And she's worked with a lot of people that struggle, to exercise psychologist, with these kind of things. And maybe when you go into post-show, you go straight away, do you know what? I'm going to keep working my coach, and I'm going to go and work with Clara as well, potentially, because I know that I really struggle, and I know that I just need that extra support for a month, maybe 2 months, just to kind of make sure that I'm looking after myself from all aspects. So that can be one thing. Also, in the off season as well, we can get quite bored of being on a meal plan. It might not just serve you, because again, it's that dopamine hit. You it's boring, right? So actually, in the off season, you might decide, actually, for me, what might be better instead of following a meal plan might be following macros. Because it might be that I might be messaging my coach every day otherwise, being like, can you change this meal and border this meal? Can you change this meal and border this meal? If I just follow macros and I can macro track, and I do think macro tracking, I'm not a big fan of it in preps, if I'm honest with you. Or intuitive eating, you have to not be a dick. You can't be like, oh, I'm macro tracking, so that rice and chicken I was going to have, I'm just going to have a bag of sweets and a chocolate bar because that's the same calories. Like, it doesn't work like that, right? You need to be sensible with it. But if you're able to do that and you know you can be sensible with it, you know, from that kind of bodybuilding perspective, actually macro tracking might be better for you in the off season. If you're an ADHD person, if you're an autism person, actually you're probably really happy with meal plans, because you know where everything is, you know what you're buying each week, and that makes life a lot easier for you. So it might be that you don't want to change anything when you go kind of from prep into off season. You might kind of say to your coach, can we just keep all the food sources the same, but maybe just push this up or push that up? You know, so again, communicate that with your coach, and that's kind of the biggest thing there. And when we're kind of changing food as well, it might be that we need to, as you know, as a coach coaching someone, it might be that we need to explain the kind of reasoning each time, and that might make someone feel more at ease, and give that person increased notice. So, okay, like, we are going to start prep in 2 weeks. And just so you know, your food is going to go down, you know, and your cardio is going to go up. I might not know right now how much by, but just expect it. You know, when you check in on a Wednesday, you might then have your food be brought down again. Like, maybe next week we might need to pull food back down again. Things like that. So just giving them that little bit of notice as well. So just a lot of things to kind of take into consideration there. And the next bit I want to talk about is kind of really following on from the podcast I did with Hayley. So what we were talking about on that one, and like I said, like, if you are a neurodivergent person, please go back and listen to this podcast, because it's so interesting. And actually kind of some of it is going to feed into nutrition as well. But when you are planning training sessions for someone, and they are someone that is neurodivergent, you must consider the increased risk of hypermobility and POTS. So not everyone is going to have it. They might not know they've got it. Now, if you are like in-person PT, like, I can see someone sometimes and be like, yeah, you've got hypermobility, like I can see it in your knees, like they bend the other way, you know, very easy to see. If you are working online with someone, you might not be able to see that as easily, depending on kind of what poses and stuff they do, how well you know them, things like that. But just have that, ask those questions to people. Okay, like you've told me you've got ADHD, you've told me you've got autism, whatever. Do you have hypermobility as well? Like, have you ever been tested for that? Do you struggle with joint pain? Do you have POTS as well? Do you go dizzy, lightheaded when you stand up and sit down too quickly? Or go, yeah, stand up too quickly. Just ask them those questions, because they might not have even thought about that. But if that is something that they do struggle with, like with hypermobility, they are at a massive increased risk of injury. Even if they don't have hypermobility, with neurodivergence, you are still more at risk of injury. So when you are programming someone's training, you really need to take that into consideration. If I've got a neurotypical person and they say, yep, I want to do free bar squats, I want to do deadlifts, I want to do this, I want to do that, I'm like, cool, like, that's fine. As long as your form's all right, you know, we're at much lower risk of injury. Now, I say this all the time, but with bodybuilding, and I, if you know me, I am the most injured bloody person at the moment. My training is just very much training around injury, which is great fun. But when you're then programming something, if someone said to me, okay, you need to do a free bar squat, Molly, and then you need to go and do a deadlift, a conventional deadlift off the floor, I would be like, that's not going to work for me, because it will just, I'll just get injured. And I do think that with bodybuilding, and this is why I love bodybuilding, when people like, I don't know why, people like to ask me if I'm going to do high rocks. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. Or CrossFit, and I'm like, no, because I would get injured doing those kind of things way too easily. I like bodybuilding because as someone that is injured, it allows, for a lot of reasons, but it allows me to still do a sport, to still be competitive in a sport, whilst training around injury. Kind of to an extent with that, obviously, depending on what, how bad your injury is. But you can train around your injury. I don't need to do squat patterns. You know, I don't need to do a free bar squat. I don't need to do a Smith machine squat. I don't need to do a hack squat to build my glutes. There's other exercises that I can do that still build my glutes, that still build my legs, without doing things like that. Because I know that doing that is going to set off injury. So if I'm programmed for someone with neurodivergent, and I say to them, do you struggle with kind of joint issues and stuff? They might say no, and I'm like, okay, cool. And I can be a little bit more free with them, that I might be, someone goes, yeah, I'm actually really injured all the time. But I'm going to take that into consideration. I'm probably not going to program in free bar squats. I'm not going to program in deadlifts. I'm not going to program in things where I think that is such a high risk injury movement. You know, especially like heavy deads, heavy squats. I'm going to program in more machine work because I know that they're less likely to be injured. And with bodybuilding, hypertrophy training, the amount you can grow is going to be drastically reduced if you are injured. So if I've got a growth phase of 6 months and I'm injured, and then I've got to take, say, a month off training legs, I can't train legs for a month, and then I can go back to training legs, but very, very light for a month. That's just reduced my off-season growth phase from 6 months to 4 months. Now, as a female, you need that time to grow because, you know, you might be natural, which obviously you need longer than. You might not, you might be enhanced, but realistically, with females, you can't push loads of drugs, or you shouldn't push loads of drugs. So again, that's going to reduce that kind of amount of time, or that amount that you can grow in that time. So it's being like very clever, very smart with your training to reduce that risk of injury. The same with POTS. If you are someone that blacks out pretty easy and I say to you, oh, do these deadlifts, whatever, the chance of you passing out halfway through your deadlift or at the end of your deadlift might be quite high, and then you're not going to finish the rest of your session, or you're going to fall and smack your head. So both of those aren't really great. So when we're doing training, we just want to kind of be very, very mindful of that. And that's with ADHD, that's with autism, that's with, you know, any other dyslexia, dyspraxia, all these different kind of neurodivergence. Just being mindful when doing training. Also then looking at someone's recovery So your recovery might be a little bit lower. So you are at risk as well. Now, it doesn't mean like all these things will happen just because you have ADHD, autism, whatever. It's more likely though. So just being careful and having, like I said, mindful when you're doing things. So recovery as well might be a little bit harder because you might have a very low immune system. So you might get ill a lot of the time. And obviously that then could cause like issues with recovery. You might be a bit slower to recover. So it might be that actually we just have to really, really keep a close eye on recovery. Are you recovering well? If you're pushing too much, it might be actually you can't train 5 days a week. You might be someone that actually just train 4 days a week. Your recovery is much better. You don't get ill as often. For me, that's a massive thing. I only do 4 days a week. I once worked for a coach who told me to train 6 days a week. And when I tell you, like, I was ill, it was ridiculous. Like, that was never, ever going to work for me. To be honest, I don't think that will work for, like, anyone. Unless you train, like, an absolute fanny. Like, no. 5 days a week, most. Obviously not including cardio there, but, you know, being just careful with that kind of recovery. Also, on that kind of low immunity, you are also at risk of autoimmune conditions a lot more. So all of these things are kind of linked. So neurodivergent, and then we've got hypermobility, POTS, autoimmune, and also hormonal issues as well. So kind of PCOS, endometriosis, things like that. So with that kind of autoimmune, it might be that you have to really keep a close eye on someone's illness that they're getting. And if it's the same kind of things coming up again and again, it's saying to them, like, look, you need to go see your doctor because you're getting ill a lot. And it's always this kind of symptoms. So then they might just need to go to their doctor, get a blood test, find out what's wrong with them. You know, I now know I've got an autoimmune condition. And that then affects my nutrition. So because of my Hashimoto's, I don't have gluten, dairy or soy. I've got clients that are ADHD and their autoimmune condition that's decided to come along with that is celiac. So they don't have gluten then in their diet. So that kind of does go back to that nutrition. So that's why I was saying, like, we will kind of come back to nutrition there. But it's understanding, like, what that autoimmune condition does, the limitations of that autoimmune condition, and how we can kind of get that better. So for me, I was suffering for a long time with chronic fatigue with it. I don't suffer that anymore, especially since I've pulled the foods out. But with the chronic fatigue, we kind of had to be very careful with, okay, if I was having a great, good week, cool, we can push. If I was having chronic fatigue, I am sleeping. And it's not like, and again, it's that kindness and empathy from a coach that's going, okay, if you have chronic fatigue, people, and like, obviously I've suffered with it and it's fucking horrendous. It's not just like, oh, I'm tired because I had a late night. You cannot fight this tired. Like, you will fall asleep wherever you are. And that could be walking the dog. That could be in the middle of the gym. That could be in a public place, in a restaurant. It could be I've fallen asleep on the escalators in the London Underground. Like, when I say you will fall asleep anywhere, I mean anywhere. Literally standing up in the middle of town, fall asleep. These are all places I've fallen asleep, right? On the reception desk at my old job, like having a conversation with someone. So it's not like, oh, you're tired, have a late night, because that's, you know, we might go home and have a nap. You wouldn't fall asleep on an escalator. Like, that's what I mean. It's extreme. And I think it's a coach that understands when you say I have chronic fatigue, it's not just like, oh, okay, well, we'll just try and get a bit more sleep then. That's not going to help the situation. It doesn't matter how much you sleep. If chronic fatigue hits and you say, look, I didn't get to train today because my fatigue was so high, like I literally couldn't get out of bed. They mean it. They're not being lazy. And I think that was something for me that I really struggled with, was people thought I was being lazy until they saw it and that I just wasn't being able to push through. And then when people saw it and they saw me fall asleep, I had issues with work because they just thought I was being lazy. The people that I worked with didn't have an issue because they could see how bad it was. And they were like, shit, like, this is bad. So I think it's, again, it's that understanding that when you say I'm tired, it's fatigue tired. you're like, okay, cool. Like, no wonder you've not done your cardio this week. No wonder you've not done your steps this week, whatever it might be. So yeah, massively, you know, thinking about how that autoimmune condition could affect someone. Equally, sleep can be a struggle with neurodivergent people. It can be because with ADHD, I find sometimes I can be hyper-focused at like 8, 9 o'clock at night. I might go into hyper-focus and I'm doing something and you get this thing called like time blindness. So you just don't know what the time is because whatever you're doing that and you're not aware of what the time is. So you can then be doing that thing until like 11, 12 o'clock at night and then something buzzes on your phone, you look and you're like, oh shit, like it's 11 o'clock and I'm not ready for bed at all. I've still got another meal to eat. You know, I've not taken my makeup off, got my pajamas on, nothing. I'm just sat working, like shit. And then you end up going to bed really late. You've still got to get up at whatever time in the morning for work. So that can be kind of one issue with sleep. The kind of for just forgetfulness to go to sleep, as ridiculous as that might sound, that's a real thing. But also some people, and like, I don't actually struggle with this at all, but some people do really struggle to get to sleep as well. So I think that it's noticing if someone's like that and then saying, okay, like what can we do? So for some people, a nighttime routine might be really, really good. Especially like autism, but also ADHD, I think, as well. So what I have done before is I used to set a timer on my phone, or not a timer, like an alarm on my phone that was like, it's bedtime now, Molly, like whatever you're doing, that alarm would go off on my phone. I'd be like, okay, like I need to stop what I'm doing and I need to get ready for bed and I have to go to bed. So sometimes just having an alarm that maybe signals time for that nighttime routine to start, and everyone's nighttime routine is going to be slightly different. Some people might like to read, some people might not. Some people it's just doing your skincare and getting into bed. And then having a time where that nighttime routine ends and it's like, you need to go to bed now, because you can kind of get to bed and then you're scrolling on your phone for ages. So that's kind of one thing, is getting that nighttime routine nailed and maybe setting timers that you don't forget. So that can be really helpful. It may also be that if they struggle to go to sleep, some nights it might be like, okay, maybe we need to put like a sleep supplement in that might just help you get off, or like chamomile tea or something like that that might help you go to sleep. So those are all things to kind of consider as well. But yeah, I think that's kind of most things I've written down here, I've covered now. But the main thing is like, people with ADHD, autism, any other neurodivergence can be very, very sensitive people. So something upsetting as well can throw you off course. So it might not even be like a big deal to some people. And this is something that I kind of always say to people, is like, because I hate it when someone's upset about something and they're really, really upset about something, and it might not be for the person that they're telling, it might not be that big a deal. You know, they might have had an argument with their boyfriend, and you know, if the person listening, they're like, I don't think that's a big deal, but for that person it is a big deal. And this kind of goes for all walks of life, like, you know, whatever kind of, if you're neurodivergent, if you're neurotypical, like whatever, if someone is upset about something, I really, really think we should respect their feelings. And if that might be something that wouldn't upset you, like it might not upset you if your boyfriend said that to you, like that might not be something that bothered you at all. But if that person's upset by something, we should respect their feelings and respect their emotion, that that is something that upsets them and that that feeling is valid. So when you've got someone that comes to you and they say, like, oh, this thing's upset me, instead of going, well, it's not a big deal, like, shut up, respect that and say, okay, like, that, for you, is something that's really upset you. Now, the thing with that is that upset can then throw that person off course. And it might be that you then need to put something in place that helps. So it might be, I'm going to use this example, something happened to me, I'm not going to go into what it was, and it really, really upset me when I was on prep last year, like really something quite not good. And I just was not okay. And I knew that for me, I would struggle to leave the house. I would struggle to go to the gym because I didn't want to be around people. I didn't want to be on my own. I didn't want to feel vulnerable. So I communicated that with my coach. I said that this is what's happened. This is what's triggered it. And that's the first thing. Communicate that emotion with your coach. You don't necessarily have to say what it was because it might be something that's really, really personal. You might not want to say what it is. But if you've got good communication with your coach, like, they should be pretty respectful of that. And I said, look, I've not done all my steps because I don't want to go, like, I'm okay when it's light, but I don't want to go out when it's dark because I'm just feeling like very on edge at the moment. So, you know, I've not actually done all my steps at the moment and I just need like some time and we need to come up with a bit of a plan. So for me, I'm okay if I've got the dog with me and I could walk the dog and that was kind of okay. And then I actually just trained at a different gym as well because I said, you know, I normally train at this gym and the equipment's really, really good, but I need to be around people that make me feel safe. So I'm actually going to go to this gym because my friend trains there and I know I'm safe when I'm around that person. And sometimes it's doing that. And maybe it's like we might need to take a little bit of a different course of action, maybe just for a day or two and go, okay, so maybe you can't do your steps at the moment in the dark, but could we do them in the gym? Could you go to the gym and do that? Okay, yeah, I would feel okay doing that. So that's something that might throw you off course. And then it's how you then react to that and find a plan that you can do that's of, like, you know, it's a kind approach to yourself and it's being kind to yourself. It's still doing things. After a day or two, I'd gone to the gym. I felt a bit better. I was okay. I could go back training where I was before, things like that. So it's knowing that if something bad happens, that can really throw someone off. It might throw them off with training. It might throw them off with nutrition. Don't then get very angry with them because that person's eaten what they shouldn't have, you know, or not gone to the gym. Just understand why and then make a plan going forwards of what we can do. So, okay, we know that this is like causing major anxiety at the moment. So let's not do that. But what can we do that's kind of meeting in the middle and going from there? So, yeah, hopefully that's all kind of very helpful. There are obviously other aspects. I don't think I touched on depression and anxiety that much. But a lot of that all kind of links in, I think. I think with depression and anxiety, it is, you know, and I was saying about what do you do to de-stress, that bubble baths, gratitude journals, yoga. Again, it's remembering to do that, getting that kind of back in the loop. And the same with anxiety, like what can you do that makes you feel less anxious, you know? Like I said before, I don't really like going out for walks if the dog's not with me. So if the dog's with me, I feel safe. I could take him out. That's fine. When the dog was, he was ill not that long ago. I then actually struggled to do my steps because I don't feel safe going out at night. So, you know, just from a personal safety point of view, I'm like, there might be some dodgy people. I don't really like it. If the dog's with me, I feel a bit safer. He might attack them if they try to mug me. Whether he would or not is a different story, but people are less likely to. So it makes me feel safer. So if you've kind of got that anxiety, and I do think actually that's not just anxiety, I think that's a real genuine concern. But if you are a little bit anxious going out for walks or something, actually finding that person's safe thing, like I know very much mine is the dog, that person's safety kind of blanket. And then kind of working with that. So saying, okay, like, why don't you walk with a dog? Why don't you go to the gym with a friend? Why don't you do this, listen to this music? Whatever it might be to find that person's kind of safety net. And then you can work from there and build from there. So hopefully that answers some questions. Hopefully that gives you a little bit of an insight into coaching someone with neurodivergence. And also making you, if you're listening to this and you are someone that is struggling, making you feel a little bit normal about it. Because sometimes I think when we struggle and you see on Instagram, and Instagram is a fucking highlight reel. And what I've kind of seen a lot of at the moment is people with ADHD or autism, whatever, And some of them are fantastic and spreading a lot of awareness around it all. Also, some of them are being like, well, I've got this and I can still hit my goals and I can still do this and it doesn't stop me and blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like that kind of toxic help. Clara calls it something really clever and I can't remember what it is. But it's kind of that like, well, you can do it. Like, you just need to just do this. You just need to just do, like, do better. And it's kind of not helpful. So actually, like, just feel normal that actually, like, you know what, it is fucking hard sometimes and you're not going to be perfect and you are going to have times where you really, really struggle. And the thing is, what I think people forget is, like, autism isn't just a love of routine. It is, if, you know, there's a lot of other things that kind of go with it, and a lot of anxiety that can build up with it. ADHD isn't just forgetting your car keys, and I fucking hate that one. Oh, bit of ADHD because I forgot my car keys. I'm like, that's like the least of my worries, you know. It is that overwhelm. It is that like real forgetfulness, and it is so many other things. And it, like, for me, it's the overwhelm. The overwhelm is the hardest bit, right? But there's so many things that kind of go into it. And a lot of it, and I think probably I speak for a lot of neurodivergent people here, is that feeling like maybe you don't belong or not normal, and that frustration of like, why can't I just do this? And I just really hope this podcast has given you maybe some ideas that you can work with to try and do whatever that thing is, and some considerations of why you might be struggling and what you could do to help that. But the biggest thing is always communication with your coach, like, and ask for kindness and empathy from them for whatever it is. And if you're not getting that, find a new coach, because they don't understand. And I think for some people, they'll never understand. So hopefully, like I said, that's helped some people. If you've got any questions about this, or if you're struggling with anything, just drop me a message on Instagram or an email or whatever, and I will try my best to help you out. Like I said, I don't have all the answers, but I will try my absolute hardest to give you them. And if I can't give you them, I'll try and point you in the direction of someone that can, or maybe some other helpful podcasts, books, etc., that might be able to help you. And maybe you've got some advice for me. Like I said, I'm very much on my journey myself. And if you do, again, drop them over to me, because I would love to hear them. And if you're interested in working with me for coaching, I obviously do prep coaching. I do photo shoots, lifestyle coaching, the lot, and obviously posing coaching as well. If you're interested in any of that, again, drop me a message. My Instagram is molly_fortitude_coaching. And my Instagram is mollyjanecoaching@gmail.com. So drop me a message and I'd love to hear from you. But thanks again always for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.